Roundtable Podcasts, underwritten by Proctors, the Capital Region's premier performing arts center featuring the best in entertainment from Broadway and around the globe. Proctors.org.
So, Richie Neal, Congressman Ryan now comes up with a budget, which the House has passed, which is draconian in the minds of many Democrats. How come?
Well, I think that he provides a voucher system for Medicare. He cuts back significantly on the earned income tax credit. He proposes curtailing Pell Grants. And he suggests that the safety net really be shredded. And I've known Paul for a long period of time. We're on the same committee, and as coincidence would have it, he and I had a constitutional discussion yesterday where I thought that my opinion on that issue had prevailed. And what Congressman Ryan essentially does with all of this is to say, you're on your own. And much of it is done without nicking one special interest tax provision in America. Much of it is done without asking the wealthier amongst us to contribute to taming these deficits. And I think that Paul subscribes fully to the argument that his mentor, Jack Kemp, embraced many years ago, which I think has caused mayhem in terms of finances, and that was the argument that tax cuts pay for themselves. So Paul's position is essentially that you can cut your way out of these deficits, and I don't subscribe to that idea at all. Right now, revenue as a percent of gross domestic product in America is a little bit north of 16%. We have historically argued in Washington over whether or not it ought to be at 19 cents or 21 cents on the dollar, meaning that that would be the capacity of revenue that would come to the federal government to meet our obligations. So it was the Bush tax cuts in 2001 and 2003, totaling $2.3 trillion, more than $1 trillion now for the war in Iraq, and a million new veterans that we should be obligated to take care of. They served us honorably, and that is a legacy issue that we're going to have to continue to pay for. And not to miss the point that right now economic growth has been fairly tepid and demand is fairly weak. So I think Paul makes a series of assumptions, many of which in my mind are incorrect.
So, I mean, nobody can ever go inside anybody else's mind. But you believe that he believes this, right? In other words, that these things that he's advancing are, in fact, if you put a lie detector on his arm, you'd get a straight line.
Well, Paul has actually been part of the ideological warfare in Washington. And there are many of us who might consider ourselves to be mainstream Democrats or Republicans who think that we could find a path forward on many of these issues. But the ideological warriors have really, in many ways, usurped the debate. And both parties now have strong bases that demand total loyalty on many of these issues. And I think in Paul's case, he's a very recent example of the ideological warrior who actually participated in a presidential campaign.
Indeed. Didn't the Republicans get sort of damaged on the Social Security and Medicare issues, two very popular programs?
Indication that they're going to reverse course, and I think that President Bush was damaged very badly on the Social Security issue and abandoned it almost 6 months after he had embraced it. And, you know, it's President Eisenhower in the 60s, in the 50s and at the end of his term, who forewarned Republicans to accept the principle of Social Security as part of the safety net. And he said to stop making that argument. And for many years it was. It was only with President Reagan's election that they began to revisit the issue of privatizing Social Security and now cutting back on Medicare. I mean, Medicare, which will celebrate its 50th year next year as part of the Johnson legacy, which is now being more widely celebrated,
it is indeed,
is a remarkable achievement. And it's the closest that America has ever come to universal health care. And understanding that there are challenges that confront it, not to miss the point, it has worked very well.
Certainly has worked for me. So
I think it's worked for the American family.
So let me proceed to midterm elections. If all that you've been talking about, Richard Neal, Richie, is what it is, how does this ideological warfare proposed by the Republicans play out in terms of their ability to keep their majority in the House or, in fact, to win the United States Senate, which many people, respected analysts, think they're going to do?
Well, I think the immediacy of the budget is it probably gives us a bit of a pump up, only because I don't think the American people are in favor of a voucher system for Medicare. And I don't think, given the burden that student debt is creating, north of $1 trillion now for American students, is something that they're going to embrace either. But there is no question that because of the way many of these congressional districts in Pennsylvania, North Carolina, and Ohio have been drawn, it makes it very difficult for us to win these seats. And that's the result of the last round of reapportionment. So I would suggest that the two Senate races to watch would be the Pryor race, Mark Pryor's race in Arkansas, and Kay Hagan's race in North Carolina, because I think that those are probably the two that will determine the outcome of the United States Senate.
So is the South, because you just mentioned, you referenced Lyndon Johnson, he did the We Shall Overcome speech and apparently said to people, that's the end for the South and the Democratic Party. Is that so?
I don't think it has to be. When I came to Congress, the South, Mississippi, Alabama, the Carolinas, Florida, Louisiana, all had a majority of Democrats.
Indeed.
The washout began sometime around 1992, and it was cemented in 1994. And then, under the leadership of Rahm Emanuel in the House, we made a great comeback. And my sense is that if you get the right candidate in the South, you could still win. And I think that we need to be very careful of that candidate selection, and the truth is to make sure they avoid a primary.
So what is it in the Democratic Party that so offends so many Southerners?
Well, I think it's the whole argument over the size of government. And I think that it's also the cultural warfare that we've witnessed here. They tend to be much more conservative than the North, particularly the Northeast. But not to miss the point that Bill Clinton and Jimmy Carter both demonstrated that you could win from the South. And let's not miss the point that Lyndon Johnson's determination to embrace the Civil Rights Act of 64 and the Voting Rights Act of 65 probably elected Carter, Clinton, and Obama.
Mm-hmm.
Because by enfranchising African-American voters, it certainly elected those three, and they all proved, as President Obama did in his first race, that you could win a state like North Carolina, and he won Virginia twice. Clinton won the South. Jimmy Carter won the South his first time and lost it the second time, with the exception of Georgia. So I think the right candidate from the South, they can win.
So tell me, I'm assuming that Hillary Clinton's going to be the candidate for the Democrats. Is Jeb Bush their best candidate? The Republicans?
Well, he certainly is saying the right things that will appeal to independent voters. That doesn't mean he's going to be a candidate, however. I think that the scolding that he gave the Republican Party this week is indicative of his argument that you might win the House and you maybe could win the Senate, but until you change the tone of the party's message, you're not going to win the presidency.
Well, won't they want to?
They lost five of the last six popular votes for president.
Right.
And the truth is that Hillary Clinton, at least for the moment, looks pretty formidable going forward. And on the Republican side, it's certainly much undecided.
Richard Neal is my congressman and therefore my favorite congressman and, and also a great teacher. I always love that part about you, Richie. You come on here and you really do explain things in such depth and so understandably that it's very compelling. So thank you for doing it.
I enjoyed this time. Thank you very much, Alan.